Welcome to the Nerd Out and Workout Podcast.
What is up, everyone? This is Coach Ossiter coming to you with Hyper Strength and Conditioning with your Nerd Out and Workout Podcast, where we nerd out and work out and podcast. And today we are joined by the one and only Jordan Syatt, personal trainer, deadlift master, trainer of Gary Vee. I know that. Yeah, we know that. So anything else you'd want to add to that, Jordan?
I'm a huge Harry Potter nerd.
Oh, yeah. Muggles and meatheads.
Short, bald dude. yeah, there's a big list of adjectives we could use, but yeah, just try and have fun with it.
That's good. So I brought, thank you again, Jordan, for the time. I wanted to come on this show. I wanted to have him bestow his knowledge upon our listeners about his knowledge and insight and in the strength world. And today we're talking about, and I told him about this before we even got onto this episode, I wanted to get his insight on the top three mistakes that strength newbies do when they start their quest for gains. And then after that, we're going to talk about how to improve confidence overall in life. Those are two things I want to talk about, because I think just strength, strong confidence, and strong as physicality, I think that goes hand in hand. And you have a really strong presence in the fitness realm right now, Jordan. You're doing great things. And I'm really glad to have you on this show and to share your energy with our people.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm stoked to be here. Love your energy. I literally, I'm just thinking about it. I was like, man, if I just found his podcast, I'd be all in, just because, like, super exciting. And I like it.
Thank you, man. I'm trying to bring the heat.
No, you're crushing it. So top three mistakes that gym newbies make.
That you see from your experience, life, career in general, that you've done yourself?
I speak in generalities, especially with this, but there are a couple things I'll say, and I'll split it up by gender to start. Okay. So generally speaking, if we're looking at dudes, then one of the biggest mistakes that I see them making is letting their ego get in the way and lifting way too heavy with terrible technique. They're sacrificing range of motion. They're trying to lift heavier either to keep up with their training partner or their buddies, or just because they're trying to impress the other people in the gym. They're worried about what other people might be thinking about them, so they want to lift heavier rather than focusing on using a big full range of motion. So I would say that's one of the most common mistakes I see men making. Women, it's actually often the opposite, where either they're not lifting at all, they're not going over to the weight area, they're doing a ton of cardio, but they're not lifting weights, and or they are lifting weights, but they never actually lift as heavy as they could. This is one thing. The vast majority of my clients are women. I've coached powerlifters, I've coached professional athletes. The vast majority of people I coach are just general everyday people who want to lose some fat and feel and move better and be more confident. But the vast majority of people I coach are women. And the one major recurring theme I see with them is they massively underestimate how strong they are. And they also oftentimes are worried that lifting very, very heavy is going to bulk them up. So they deliberately try to lift lighter, and they'll have a great range of motion and they'll be using great technique. But if you ask them on a scale of 1 to 10, how difficult is that? It's probably somewhere around like a 5, 6, maybe a 7. When they should be going more towards an 8 or a 9. And I would very much encourage more women to be lifting heavier, straining under heavier loads. You don't need to focus on your technique. If it's already that good, you don't need to try and perfect it even more. Perfect is the enemy of good enough, right? It's like, you doesn't need to be perfect. It's good enough. It's all we want. So then from there, add some more weight to it. Then for the third most common mistake, and this isn't necessarily lifting related. It's more just about gym environment, gym culture, being in the gym, I would say is, I mentioned it with the men and it works with the women as well. Most people are very insecure. Most of the gym is full of insecure people, right? And it's an entire room full of insecure people trying to change their physique. And I like that they're in there to improve and to get better, but it's important to remember that everyone in there is insecure. And it's not just solely relegated to the gym. I think everyone in life is insecure in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. We all have our own insecurities. But the gym is a room full of insecure people trying to exercise to decrease their insecurities. And oftentimes, part of that insecurity is feeling like everyone in the gym is watching you, feeling like everyone in the gym is judging you, feeling like everyone in the gym is like, oh, that person's ugly, that person's fat, that person's weak, that person sucks, what are they doing here? And the fact of the matter is, no one gives a fuck what you're doing in the gym. No one is watching you, no one is judging you, no one cares what you're doing. Everyone is so worried about what other people are doing that they can't even begin to comprehend the idea of looking at someone else and judging them and caring about them. So you might be worried that the super jacked dude with the tattoos and the beard is judging you, but the reality is that super jacked dude with the beard and the tattoos is often worried about what you think about him. And so it's stop worrying about what other people are thinking about you and just focus on yourself and getting better. Because even if, let's just say, for the sake of argument, let's just say that someone is judging you. So what? It says a lot more about them than it says anything about you. So even if they are judging you, don't let that prevent you from doing what you should be doing. Just keep going, keep your head down, work hard, get in and get out.
Man, that's some solid advice there. Do you have any stories to share? Anything personally you are, or things that you know of that you want to talk about that kind of exemplifies these subjects that you just talked about?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I first started to deadlift, which is like my favorite lift of all time. And I've done pretty well with the deadlift. But when I first started in high school, I remember I vividly snuck into my high school's gym. The gym was closed. I snuck in to work out, which shows you I'm definitely in the right industry. Like, I just love this stuff. But I snuck into the gym to work out. And I put way too much weight on the bar. I wanted to try and lift as heavy as I possibly could. And I absolutely destroyed my back. Like, it was one of the most debilitating back injuries I've ever had. I was in high school. Just blew my back out. And then, remember, I snuck into the gym. So now I just loaded up the bar as heavy as I could, which was probably in the 200s at that point in my life. I had to unrack the whole bar. Just like with my back completely done, I had to sneak back out of the gym. And then I was, at that point in my life, I was interning at a gym after school because I was trying to learn how to be a coach and I was interning. And I didn't want the head coach to know that I had been an idiot and put way too much weight on the bar and blew my back out. So I had to try and pretend like I was totally fine. But he realized what had happened. He realized I was walking around with my hand on my back. So he would, I remember one time as I was walking around the gym, he was like, Jordan, could you go pick up that 70-pound kettlebell for me?
Oh, he knew. Yeah, he knew.
Like, oh, God. And then I was like, man, I really hurt my back. He's like, how'd you do it? I was like, I was deadlifting too heavy. He's like, yeah, all right, let's make sure that doesn't happen again. But so that was just one example of many in which people go way too heavy at the expense of technique. Yeah, I've worked with literally hundreds, if not thousands of women at this point who the one recurring theme I see with women is they just underestimate how strong they really are. They really don't believe. I'll never forget when I got my first in-person coaching job out of college. A woman came in for her first ever workout in ever, like with a personal trainer. And she was a little bit, she wanted to lose some weight. She was a little bit heavier than she wanted to be. And I could tell she was very nervous and not confident in herself. Mm-hmm. So I told her, I was like, oh, she was watching other people work out and she was like, oh my God, that's so heavy. Like, they're so strong. Da, da, da. She was looking at what other people are doing. And I told her, I was like, by the end of this workout, you're going to lift 100 pounds. And she was like, shut up. And she's like, no way. Now, what's interesting about this is a new coach, like, and if you're in the fitness industry, you know, 100 pounds isn't really that much. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, that's not like an impressive amount, but to them, it's everything in the world. To hear 100 pounds when you don't have context for it, it's like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. So I said, by the end of this workout, you're going to lift 100 pounds. I guarantee it. And she didn't believe me. So we were doing kettlebell deadlifts, and there's 100 pound kettlebell. I didn't let her see how much weight it was, but we started with the 16 kilogram, then went to the 24 kilogram, then 32 kilogram, and finally worked up to 100. And once she lifted the 100 pounds, I was like, do you know how much weight that was? She was like, no, how much? I was like, that was 100 pounds. And she broke down crying. Oh. She like couldn't believe that she had actually lifted 100 pounds. And then she went home and she posted on her Facebook how happy and proud she was. And it was one of those things where if you, this is one of the benefits of having a coach, right? Where it's like, they can push you past where you think your real limits are. And it exemplified to me that oftentimes women, men too, but this, in this specific case, more women will not lift as heavy as they actually can because they have these self-limiting beliefs in place.
The self-limiting beliefs, that's the thing. And that 100-pound realization after they did it without you telling them, like, that's the greatest moment of coaching. One of the greatest moments when you coach, right? It's not about like elite athletes. Everyone from the coaches I've seen or talked to, like, sometimes, or the rookie, not the vetted ones, but like these up and comers now, they want to like train athletes. And it's like,
it's, I think that's what every coach wants when they first start is they oftentimes want to work with people who want to work. Right.
Yeah.
So coaches, when they're just starting out, they're really passionate. They're like, I love this. I
want to work with people
who are equally as passionate as I am. It's like, well, if you only want to work with people who are equally as passionate as you are, then you're only going to be working with coaches, and that's not going to happen. So, but I mean, I remember when I first started, I was like, I only want to work with dedicated people, people who are really going to work hard, high level athletes. And what you realize through actually coaching those people is oftentimes they don't work nearly as hard as the everyday general population. It's one of the reasons my favorite client is generally between like a 28 to a 50-year-old woman. Nobody works harder in the gym than like that age range woman. They go nuts. They work super hard. They're unbelievably motivated. Like, I like working with men. I've worked with many, many power lifters and some really high level, some men over the years. Generally, they like to take longer rest periods. They're like, all right, like, well, relax a little bit.
They kind of like to be babied. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, put the arm on the squat rack and talk. And then it's like, the most women, when they come in the gym, like, they're there to work. Like, they don't have their cell phone on them. Like, when they're investing in a coach, they're like, you tell them to do like crazy circuits, like ball slams and kettlebell swings and sprints. They're going, they go. And it's like, I love that. A lot of the high level athletes, not all of them, but a lot of them, they're naturally gifted athletes. They've been good. They would be good regardless of whether or not they had you as your coach or not. Like, mm-hmm. they would be a high level athlete. I mean, if you look at some of the workouts that you see, some of these high level athletes like LeBron James or whoever doing, like, they're doing stupid stuff, like on physio balls and Bosu balls, doing overhead stuff that make serious danger, like things you would never have someone do. They're not getting better because of that. They're already amazing. Like, they're already an incredibly gifted athlete. So, I mean, one of the things that you learn as a coach coaching high-level athletes is your job is more than anything to help prevent them from getting injured. Like, that's your role. As long as they don't get injured, then they're going to be able to play their sport longer and make more money. And when you're coaching a high-level athlete, you've got million-dollar contracts on the line. If you hurt them, it's a lot of pressure to be dealing with all the time. When you're working with everyday people, generally I've found it's much more meaningful. They tend to work way harder. You can relate to them more. They can relate to you more. So I think it's a young person's idea that they all want to coach high level athletes. And the more you do it, the more you realize, I think a lot of the most rewarding experiences come from the everyday people.
Isn't the women the ones who usually want the 5 a.m. slots, the 4 a.m. slots, the 6 a.m. slots?
Up early. Yep. Grinding hard. Yeah. Come in like ready to go. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just had another client or a potential new client, and she's like, I want to do 6 a.m. Can you guys do 6 a.m.? I'm like, okay, yes, let's do it. But I always notice it's the women who are like 6 a.m., 5 a.m., 4 a.m. I'm like, okay, we'll figure this out. And then a lot of dudes are like, You got 5 p.m. You got noon. You got noon. Yeah, noon. I was like, noon. I was like, oh man. All right. Okay. Let's.
That's my lunch break, man. All right.
I kind of want to eat, bro. Oh, that's really good. When I'm going back to how you talk about, like, and it's true, like a lot of women, they're afraid to touch the weight to blow up. They feel like they're going to become like a Hulk or something. What is the conversation you have with them? How do you open their mind to it? Is it just like, hey, by the end of the day, you're going to lift 100 pounds? Or what is something that you've been seeing in working with women on how to kind of open their minds to lifting weight and be like, no, this is going to be good for you?
So I guess it's different online than in person. I'll talk about in person because I think that I love in-person coaching. I think every in-person coaching will make you a better online coach, but being an online coach won't make you a better in-person coach. When I was coaching in person, people might come in, a lot of women might come in under the impression that lifting very heavy is going to bulk them up, right? Now, they have no logical basis for this. They don't have a perspective to know, well, how much weight will bulk them up. They don't know, and there is none. Like, it's just not accurate. So if they expressed those concerns to me, one of my favorite ways to just eliminate it immediately is to say something to the effect of, listen, worrying about lifting heavy weights, bulking you up, so you look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, is like worrying that driving to the grocery store is going to turn you into a NASCAR driver. It's just like, it's not going to happen. Driving to the grocery store, like, just because you're driving doesn't mean you're going to turn into a NASCAR driver. And just because you're lifting heavy weights doesn't mean you're going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like, that's how ridiculous the comparison is. And once you say something like that, they can laugh and they can start to internalize it. And then you can explain it a little bit. But what I start doing is I just have them start lifting and I don't tell them how much weight they're lifting. I don't tell them. If they ask, like, how much weight is this? Like, don't worry about it. Just do it. And it's like, and I make it a joke. It's not like I'm a drill sergeant. It's like, yeah, how much weight am I lifting? I'm like, don't worry about it. Just lift it. And then they lift and they laugh and they're doing it. And like, it starts to burn. And then what they realize is when I tell them, you know, that was 40 pounds, that was 50 pounds that you were squatting with, whatever it is, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe they start to then have this sense of empowerment because they realize how strong they are. And then the empowerment that comes from realizing their strength begins to the empowerment that they get from realizing their strength overshadows the worry about being bulky from lifting it. So they start to chase the positive feeling of feeling strong rather than staying away from it for fear of getting bulky.
That's really good. I used to use animals as reference. How much did I lift? 3 corgis. How much is that? I don't know. Just think about 3 corgis. All right. I want to lift more corgis. All right. Let's lift more corgis.
That's great. That's super sticky. I love that.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Four goats. I used to, when I was announcing, we did a mock meet for a lot of one of my business partners. She really wanted to do a mock meet for the women. She was like, I need them to feel what a meet is, but they get too nervous. Cause it's like, we try to get them signed up for like a USPA meet and they're like, oh, so like, all right, we'll just do an in-house meet.
Which is great. I love it.
We did an in-house meet and I was the announcer. And every time they lifted, they're like Yadell's going to be lifting 4 goats. And then I was like, what? 4 goats, everyone.
Four goats on her back right now. Wow, great depth with 4 goats.
That's exactly what I was doing. 3 dolphins. I was like, wait, what?
Dude, I love that idea. That's phenomenal.
Then people think, and then I had a few of my friends in the audience. They were like on the calculator, like, wait, what kind of dolphin? Is it a full grown or is it like,
you know, what's interesting about this though? An online coach, someone who's never coached someone in person, wouldn't understand the genius behind what you did there, right? Because the reason that you did that is through coaching people in person, you realize that they had no perspective for what. If I told someone I deadlifted 1,000 pounds and they've never lifted weight before, they would have the exact same response as if I told them I deadlifted 400 pounds. They have no perspective difference between 400 and 1,000. They don't know. They're just like, wow, that's a lot of weight. Like, wow. But when you start to discuss it in terms of animals and things that they can relate to, mm-hmm. this is a genius on a level that most coaches, if they've never coached someone in person, would never understand. I love that.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, it goes to what you're saying. People are always feeling judged. And that's the thing, especially my niche, fandom and fitness. I got people are like, oh, you train the nerds and all that stuff. But I'm like, you know, if you really look at it, we're all kind of nerds in our own little way. Like,
we're all nerds.
Yeah, we're all nerds. Everyone nerds out about, you know, pop culture is fine, but you also nerd about cars, alcohol. You could nerd about all these little hobbies too. You're a nerd about something. But at the same time, it's like when we get so immersive about our hobbies, it's easy to feel judged when you're around people who are not as passionate about what you're trying to do. And so when you're like in the fitness realm, you're just trying to get stronger. But then now in your eyes, you're like, oh yeah, my God, I'm here. And all these other people know exactly what they're doing. And like, they're looking at me and like, oh my God. And to just get them focused on, hey, just focus on yourself. Just like have fun with the situation, make fun of the situation, make fun of yourself. So that you can get all that out of the way and really start making progress. And that's the thing. Yeah, you mentioned online coaching and in-person coaching. Now, everything going on with the pandemic and stuff like that. And there's fires. I'm from the Bay Area, so there's fires now. Oh, there's fires. There was an earthquake like 3 days ago. It's great. It's like go inside, go outside, go inside, go outside. But I kind of wanted to get I'm dead serious, man. It's like, oh, there's a pandemic. Stay inside. Okay. And then there was an earthquake. Okay. You gotta be outside. And then there's fires now. You gotta be inside. It's like, okay. What
Whoever you are, just put the mask on. You'll be
as a gym owner too. It's like, hey, you can't open indoors. Okay. We'll go outdoors, you know, like positive. Yeah. And now it's like, there's fires. You can't go outdoors. So now I'm just like, all right, guys, just wear a mask and wait for my online program. but man, where was I going with this? What was I talking about? Oh my God, I just totally lost my train of thought. But oh yeah. There's been a spike in online training now. There's a lot. I am one of the in-person coaches. I love in-person training. It was only until this whole pandemic that I started going shifting a lot of stuff online. It's like trying to ride a bike again because I'm like, okay. What? Like, it's like the Zoom coaching was very frustrating. Like one of my other staff coaches was like, Austin, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I can't. And I'm like, okay. And so what's your perspective on that? How are you seeing online coaching and online training in general developing? And what's your advice in people venturing into online training now that's being more of an option? And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think I've been doing online stuff since 2011. So the online world is fortunately not new to me. When I was getting into the online world, it was very weird, right? So before we started recording, we were talking about how, you know, people are like, why are you doing the podcast? Like, are you going to make any money from it? You're like, well, no, I'm not making any money from it, but I'm helping people. And it doesn't mean down the road, you're not going to make money from it in some way, shape or form. Right. When I first started doing online coaching, no one was making money from online coaching. Like it was not really a thing. And I got a lot of backlash from people being like, online coaching isn't going to work. Online coaching is like, it's dangerous. You shouldn't be doing it. And it was mainly from people who'd been coaching in person for 10, 15, 20 plus years. And they didn't see how it was possible. I've always known online coaching was doable. And over the years, I think I've done a very good job of making it more effective with various systems and improving it. I do think that in-person coaching has some very clear benefits, some pros, but I also think online coaching has some very clear benefits and pros, and they both have pros and cons. So one of the obvious pros of in-person coaching over online would be you get to be there with them. You're in person. If they're screwing up their technique, then you're there right there with them. You can help fix it, whatever. One of the pros of online coaching is you can speak with them daily, right? You can speak with them via email. And oftentimes when you're coaching people in person, it's very difficult to have much of a meaningful conversation outside of the session, right? It's like you're in there, you're trying to get them to work. It's like you don't want them to waste too much time talking. You would like them to feel open to talk, but it's difficult to have that type of a conversation when you only have 30, 45, 60 minutes max several times a week. Mm-hmm. Online coaching, you can actually get to know people. You can they're sitting down at their computer, they're writing you an email, maybe you're doing phone calls with them, Skype calls, whatever it is, you can get to know them as a person. You can get to know their family, how many kids they have, what they do for work. Do they like their work? Do they not like their work? Where are they struggling with their nutrition? Are they stress eating? Why are they stress eating? How long have they been stress eating for? What was the cause of it? It's like you can now get into the deep, deep, dark parts of who that person is and really learn how to coach them based on who they are, not just based on their movement patterns, right? So it's like there's a lot that goes into both of these, and I think they can both play off of each other. And I think one of the major benefits of, you know, this, I would obviously prefer this pandemic didn't happen, mm-hmm. but one of the major benefits of it is I think it's given people a reason to try online coaching. Mm-hmm. It's given people who have never done online, who never would do online, a reason both for coaches to get online to help more people and for people who are just everyday fitness enthusiasts to try an online program and realize there's a tremendous amount of benefit in it if it's done properly.
We're feeling it. So like we're feeling it, but it's, I like that insight because it's true. It's definitely something that a lot of new coaches now are like, a lot of in-person coaches are like, okay, let's try this out. Okay. I'm in it. Now what do I do? But I can actually relate to the knowing the person more online because you have more, you're like, I'm like texting my guys. Let's jump on a Zoom call or whatever. What are you having issues with? You know, I mean, my in-person clients, I'll talk to them too, but it's not as often as the online clients.
Correct.
Like, online's like, oh yeah, yeah, do this. And I'm like having these constant conversations and I'm like, oh, I can see it now. Like, I can see the allure of it. I'm like,
I'll give you some unsolicited advice. Have them stop texting you, put everything in email.
Oh, okay.
For a number of reasons. Number one is when someone's texting you, just by nature of the platform, they expect an immediate response.
Okay. I'll take that.
If you have 10, 15, 20 clients or more online and they're all texting you, you're going to burn yourself out. And I'm speaking from personal experience.
No, I'm starting to notice that. I was
like, and another thing is, this is equally, if not more important, when people write a text, oftentimes they just go stream of conscious. I need help now. And they just go right now. When they write an email, they have to sit down and think about it. They sit down, they think about it. And now, even equally, if not more important than that, is now you have a log of not only what they said, but the dates and times they said it. So if someone is saying, hey, like maybe one day they say, hey, I'm super excited with how much progress I'm making. And they're like, I've lost 4 pounds, whatever it is, super excited. Then 7 days later, they email you. I feel like I'm not making any progress. This is stupid. It's not working. You go back to a week ago and you copy and paste what they wrote and say, hold on. So a week ago you said this, why are you feeling this way now? And now you can have these in-depth conversations and you can't just say, wait, but I remember you saying this one time. It's like, no, you actually copy and paste their words into the email. You screenshot it. This is what you said. Let's have a conversation. And they can be like, wow, I was probably having an emotional response. You're right. Blah, blah, blah. The email is a great, keep everything in one spot. Don't have DMs and texts and all this, like have one spot, and email is the best where you can have everything laid out and that will make your coaching experience more effective.
That I needed that because that I am noticing that now, like people are DMing me, I'm texting me, emailing me, YouTube comments. Like, shit. Yeah. No, that's right. Okay, good. That's good.
Make it super clear when you start working them online. It's like, hey, listen, I'm your friend. I'm here for you. But if there's anything coaching related, do not text me. Do not DM me. Do not tweet at me. Do not post on my Facebook wall. Do not leave a YouTube comment. Email me with your questions. And email is the only place where we'll do coaching. If you do not do that, I might miss it. I might not reply. And I won't be able to have a log of our conversations.
Do you have like a separate email just for that? Or no, it's like it goes to your email.
You can create a coaching email just for that. I always just use my regular one. Okay. And you can create labels for online clients versus regular emails or whatever it is. But if it's going to be easier for you to have a coaching email, absolutely do it.
Interesting. Very good. Oh, well then, I'm getting coached during this episode, guys. I love it. Let's touch on the confidence part now that I want to talk about, because that last part you talked about, everyone's always feeling like they're people are watching them, they're insecure. Well, I'll call it sounds of confidence, and especially now, everyone's living very differently than 5 months ago. and confidence may or may not have been affected. I'm pretty sure it's been affected a ton. What are your ways to help clients improve their confidence levels? Because from my experience, I know that the quest of strength, the quest of fitness, the quest of taking your life back, it all comes down, there's confidence always involved. Self-confidence always. Is always involved.
Yep.
What are some of the things that you've found very helpful to help your clients kind of achieve that stat boost?
Man, it's so funny. So I'm very impressed with you, just for whatever it's worth. And maybe that means, but I am. You're picking up on things. I know you coach people based on what you're saying. I speak with a lot of people who say they're coaches, but they haven't actually coached people. And I can tell by what they're saying. The things you say let me know you're a great coach and you actually care about your clients and what you're doing. And I know this, it doesn't take much research to understand. There's something called self-efficacy. Have you heard that term before?
I've heard it, yes.
So self-efficacy is similar to confidence. It's not the same, but they're similar. And self-efficacy basically means it's your belief in your ability to accomplish a given task, right? And what you said about self-confidence is it always comes up in some way, right? And like it all comes back to your confidence in yourself. Self-efficacy is the single greatest determinant of success in literally anything. This has been measured in alcohol cessation, smoking cessation, fitness, health, living a healthy life. If you believe in your ability to succeed, you are infinitely more likely to actually succeed. If you don't believe in your ability to succeed, you are infinitely less likely to succeed, which, like you said, it all comes back to confidence. If you believe in yourself, you're more likely to do it, which makes sense. The example I always use is if I told you that you had a 99% chance or a 98, 97% chance of winning the Mega Millions, if you put $10,000 down, then you would, even if you didn't have $10,000, you would raise $10,000 because you knew you're basically going to win the Mega Millions, right? It's like you might have zero money in your bank, but you go to friends, you go to family, you'd figure out a way to raise $10,000 because you knew you were going to win the Mega Millions. It's just like probability is ridiculous. On the other hand, maybe you have $100,000 in your bank account, right? And I told you, you have a 7% chance of winning the Mega Millions if you put down $10,000. You might be like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be willing to risk a 93% chance of losing for these $10,000, right? It's like you don't believe in your ability to win. So why would you actually put that money down? Why would you take that action? What this shows is a very crude example of when you believe in your ability to succeed, you're going to do whatever it takes to succeed. If you believe you can actually lose weight and get stronger and healthier and love your body, you're more likely to spend time going through the grocery store and picking foods that are going to be better for you. You're more likely to invest in a coach and go to a gym and work out, spend the time, get up early, get sweaty, go through the difficult aspects because you believe it will be worth it. You'll actually succeed on the back end. On the other hand, if you've yo-yo dieted your whole life, if you've tried and failed, you've never worked, you don't believe it can work, then you're far less likely to actually do anything consistent because you don't think it's going to work anyway. Why bother if you've failed over and over and you don't think it's going to succeed? So what this comes back to is exactly what you were saying, which is it does all boil down to your belief in your ability to succeed, your level of self-efficacy. So for me as a coach, I'm always trying to figure out, number one, I'm trying to measure someone's self-efficacy. And there are many ways to do this, but how do you measure someone's self-efficacy? A very simple way to do this is on a scale of 1 to 10. And I would do this with my clients all the time. I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being you don't believe in yourself at all, like you know 100% you're going to fail. 10 being 100% you know you're going to succeed without a shadow of a doubt. How confident are you in your ability to, and if, let's say I'm going to do like a 3-month program with them. How confident are you in your ability to succeed by the end of these 3 months? They'll give me a number. And what I found out through doing this with thousands of people is that if someone said they were a 7 or a higher, they were going to do it. It was almost a guarantee. If someone said they were a 6 or lower, then they were significantly less likely to actually be consistent with the program. Not just succeed, but just to be consistent. They would drop off a couple weeks in. They wouldn't be doing it anymore. So my goal, if someone said they were 7 or higher, my approach is very hands-off. They're already confident. I don't have to be rah-rah cheering them on. They're already confident. And those are the people who they don't need that like, oh, hey, let me like be meticulous with the coaching. Like they just need the program. They're going to get it done. people who are six and lower, they're the ones who every day they're waking up thinking, oh no, I made a mistake. It's not working. My metabolism isn't working. My gender, my age, that I ate too much last night. My weight spiked up. I failed. They're the people who need you there to hold them accountable and to reassure them that they're doing great. And what I would always do is I'd re-measure their self-efficacy. And ideally I'd see an increase. Maybe they said three. So a very simple way, for example, to increase someone's self-efficacy immediately is if someone said, hey, I'm a 3 out of 10. That's pretty bad, right? Like you wouldn't want them to be that low.
Yeah.
Most people's response would be, well, why'd you say 3 and not 4? The issue with that is now they're going to tell you exactly why they don't believe in themselves. So instead of saying, why'd you say 3 and not 4? I would say, why'd you say 3 and not 2? Now they're going to tell you, well, you know, I mean, if I put my mind to something, I really can do it. They're going to start talking to you about why they actually can succeed. This is a very, and immediately if you re-ask the question, their self-efficacy will likely be up at least 1 or 2 points just from there. And the goal isn't to always like to get them to increase their self-efficacy and have it stay there. The goal is to get them to learn how to increase it on their own without you asking these probing questions. And that comes from showing them they can succeed. So when they first start out, rather than giving them a program where they train 6 days a week and they're doing 2.5 hour sessions, which is just impossible, give them a program for 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 15 to 20 minutes at a time. Let them see they can do it. Just actually make it happen. Now, oh yeah, I'm feeling better. I'm getting it done. I'm getting it in, drinking water. I'm being more focused. Now their self-efficacy goes up because they believe they can succeed. Then you can, this is why the optimal program, quote unquote optimal, is only optimal if someone can actually do it. It doesn't matter how good the program is if they're not being consistent with it. So if people are struggling, then you start off with maybe something that's not optimal on paper, but is optimal for helping them believe in their ability to succeed. And that's going to lead them to a more optimal program on paper.
Those are some awesome pointers. The why 6 and not 5. Very good.
Right?
Very good. Instead of why 6 and not 7, because that is a common thing. Wise words from Jordan Syatt. Thank you, man. Thank you for the time. I appreciate you jumping on this episode, man. I'm very excited when this thing drops. You have any last words, any lasting advice for us?
Man. Lasting advice. I would say if you're struggling with any form of self-confidence or maybe even more anxiety right now, I think that one of the best things to know is you're not alone in any of it. I'll say this. I'll end with this. I see a therapist. I've been seeing a therapist for about 6 weeks now. Nice. I'm trying to talk about it more just to normalize it and make it more of a thing for people to talk about and discuss. And it's helped me a lot with my own anxiety. So if you're thinking about seeing a therapist or you're thinking about ways to improve your own mental health, then there's no better time to take action than now.
Beautiful. What house of Harry Potter are you in again?
I would say Gryffindor. I'd like to think.
Fellow Gryffindor. There we go. That is solid advice. That's actually going to be the next episode I'm going to be talking about. But yes, thank you, Jordan, again for the time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, do all the things. Rate us on iTunes, please. Nerd Out Workout Podcast. This is Coach Austin with Hyper Strength and Conditioning with your Nerd Out Workout Podcast with Jordan Syatt. Thank you again, guys. Talk to you guys later. Okay, bye.